Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll learn how you can fly in a World War II bomber, and we'll hear about a special luncheon for military moms and grandmothers. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
This month, nearly 3,000 Minnesota National Guard members are returning home from a year-long deployment. Some of these men and women provided medical evacuation in Afghanistan or mentored Afghan security forces. Others were in charge of force protection in Kuwait and provided convoy security throughout Iraq during the drawdown phase of Operation New Dawn. They're coming home, and many of them are facing a new battle, unemployment. Leaders in the 34th Infantry Division, 1st Brigade Combat Team, are telling me that more than 800 of their 2,700 soldiers that are coming home are looking for employment. We are addressing this issue head on. These soldiers are getting connected to the veteran employment representatives at their local workforce centers located throughout the state. And they're connecting with mentors in some of Minnesota's finest companies. We're challenging these soldiers to translate their military skills into civilian skills, to dive into networking, and to embrace the confidence that they've shown this past year while wearing the uniform of the United States Army and Air Force. Last year, the nation depended on them. There is no reason why an employer can't depend on them now. Our soldiers are posting their resumes online at MinnesotaWorks.com, and they're connected with Minnesota Workforce Centers throughout the state. Your chance to hire a leader that thrives as a team player and excels at working under pressure starts by visiting PositivelyMinnesota.com/veterans.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now from the Minnesota wing of the Commemorative Air Force is Dick Leininger and Todd Lofquist. Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dick, I understand you're a veteran of the United States Reserve, a Vietnam veteran, Vietnam-era veteran.
Vietnam-era Army Reserve.
Can you tell us a little bit about your time in the Army?
I graduated from college in 1968, and the draft was looking for me quite actively. And I found a reserve unit in Wood River, Illinois that would take me, and so I enlisted in the Army Reserve. It was a transportation unit, but they specialized in avionics. And for some insane reason, they sent me to radar school. My lowest score on the Armed Forces qualification test was electronics. So they figured I'd be a logical student for radar, ground control approach radar.
So, Dick, your military service goes back to
69 to 75, I think.
And then between then and now, you were instrumental in bringing the moving Vietnam Wall to South St. Paul.
Well, I joined the Commemorative Air Force in 1996. And while I was there, I had the opportunity to bring the moving Vietnam Wall to South St. Paul, and I put together a committee and raised the money to bring it. And it is a national monument, even the traveling one. And so we were obligated to keep that thing open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we put it in the football stadium of South St. Paul High School. And we were able to get enough people between the wing and the community to keep it open. And it was a moving experience.
For us, especially for us Vietnam and Vietnam-era veterans. And with you today is Sergeant First Class Todd Lofquist from the Minnesota National Guard. Todd, Sergeant Lofquist, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And your military career is, tell us a little bit about it.
It started in 1985 after 3 years of college. The calling to join the military was pretty strong, so I joined the Army Reserves. Started in helicopters with the Cobra. And after 4 years of that, I wanted a little bit more. 1 week in a month and 2 weeks in the summer wasn't enough, so I went active duty. Switched from Cobras to the Blackhawks and spent 3 years with the Air Cav, the 3rd Cav, out of Fort Bliss. During that time, I also spent 6 months over in for Desert Shield, Desert Storm. In 1992, came back, thought the grass was greener, but 4 months later, I was back in the Army again, this time as a recruiter, and I've been there since, spending the last 18 years in the recruiting field, either as a recruiter, operations sergeant, or the last 5 years in marketing for the Minnesota Army National Guard.
And Todd, while we're talking to you, what prompted you to join the Commemorative Air Force?
That was one of those things. I always went to their air shows, and it was, you know, I looked at their cadet program when I was at that age, and then during my military career when I was off in Texas, you know, I still was thinking about it. And for several years when I came back, I just kept going once or twice down to the air wing to take a look at it. And about 3 years ago, I finally decided, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and join, and I have no regrets. The only regret I have is that I didn't do this several years earlier, because it's a great, wonderful experience.
We're speaking with Dick Leininger and Todd Lofquist from the Minnesota Wing of the Commemorative Air Force on Minnesota Military Radio. Dick, I understand the Commemorative Air Force was originally the Confederate Air Force.
That's correct.
And was started in 1957 with one aircraft.
Yeah, there were six World War II veterans who flew fighters, and they were operating out of Rebel Field in Mercedes, Texas. I think one of them was a sharecropper, I mean a duster. They got together, pooled the resources, and bought a Mustang. I think they paid $1,500 for it.
A P-51 Mustang.
Yes, sir, which now is the price to start about $2 million. And then a couple of years later, they got two F-8F Bearcats, and they paid $805 apiece for those. And they realized that no one was saving these aircraft. And they became the start of the Warbird movement. And they got themselves organized, realized there'd be some tax benefits if they organized as a private nonprofit, and they started building a supply of World War II airplanes.
So, Dick, originally the mission of the Confederate Air Force was to save an example of every aircraft that flew during World War II. Is that right?
That's right.
And this is many years later. How are you doing?
We're doing well. There are about 9,000 or 10,000 members in the organization. There are 70 wings and squadrons around the world. We have four outside the United States. And between the 70 units, we have about 150 aircraft. They're not all in flying condition, but that's a pretty good number.
And Dick, what's your position with the Commemorative Air Force?
Since 2000, I've been the adjutant officer for the wing, which is a fancy word for secretary. I keep the minutes for the meetings, but I have other functions. I'm not a pilot or a mechanic. And you don't have to be a member of the CAF. But I do things that need to be done there. I sweep the floors. I clean the aircraft. I can fix the women's john when it breaks because I have Home Repairs Merit Badge. I publish the wing newsletter, quarterly newsletter. I write thank you notes. And I buy the flowers for funerals. So I provide certain functions that really need to be done by the wing. And I don't have to be licensed by the FAA to do those.
Sergeant Lofquist, doesn't sound like there's anything left for you to do.
No, I joined, like I said, 3 years ago. And when I came in, I noticed that the museum needed some help, and they didn't really have anybody running the museum at the time. So I volunteered. I stepped up and said that I'd like to take over the museum. And it's been a lot of work, 3 years of cataloging all the items, taking pictures of them, and just trying to get them all into a database so we know what we have to start with. And this past winter now, we've done a major renovation on the museum, put up some more walls, changed the display cases around, and it's just a wonderful experience, you know, having these artifacts from veterans from the wars that, you know they've been over in a war, and soldier brought it back, and it's just really neat to have that, you know, that experience and see that artifact right there that they brought back.
Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Minnesota Wing of the Commemorative Air Force and let our listeners know how they can fly in a World War II bomber. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and joining me today is Dick Leininger and Todd Lofquist from the Minnesota Wing of the Commemorative Air Force. Dick, we've been talking about the Commemorative Air Force and its mission and where it came from. If our listeners want to find more information, what's the website?
The website is CAFMN.org, CAF for Commemorative Air Force, MN for Minnesota.org. And we've got a great website. It talks about the aircraft that we have in our possession, talks about the events that are coming up. Tells you how to join. Tells you how to find us. There's a map there to get you to the museum.
So it's CAFMN.org, and we'll have a link to that on MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.
And we're in South St. Paul at Fleming Field.
Dick, can you tell me what is the Minnesota wing of the Commander of Air Force? What's your part in the whole thing nationwide?
Well, first of all, I want to point out we are the first wing. After the CAF was founded, Minnesota Wing got the first charter in 1972. So we've been at that airport for about 40 years. And we've been slowly building our fleet of aircraft and maintaining them. It's a year-round job to keep those planes in the air. We have five assigned to us right now, including our B-25. We don't fly in the winter because of weather reasons and insurance reasons, but we're also all volunteers. So the winter is when we perform the annual inspections on the aircraft. They're just now coming out of annual. We've got one left to finish, but the B-25 was up in the air last week for the first time for the season.
I understand that went through a 12-year restoration. Is that true?
Yeah, we were given the airplane in 1979. We spent a year going out to Rice Lake, Wisconsin to get the engines airworthy. In 1980, we got a ferry permit to fly it back to Fleming Field, and we opened the door, pushed it in, took it apart completely, and 12 years later, opened the door, pushed it out, and flew it. We flew it 20 years ago last Wednesday. We purposely waited for the anniversary of the Doolittle Raid in 1942. So we flew it on April 18th, the same day that Jimmy Doolittle took 16 B-25s off the aircraft carrier Hornet. And we've been working on it ever since.
And how many other aircraft do you have?
Well, we have four others. We have a Stinson L-5, which is a reconnaissance aircraft, a tail dragger. They were used for forward air control and ambulance work. They carried officers around. During the Battle of the Bulge, Patton found some and put rockets on its wings and sent them after Panzer tanks. So they call it the Flying Jeep because of those things. We also have a Ryan PT-22, which is a primary trainer underwing, open cockpit, about 5-cylinder engine, about 100 horsepower. And that was the first aircraft the cadets flew. They used that mostly in California and Arizona. In South St. Paul, they used Stearman's N3Ns, the Navy version. Then they segued to the Vultee BT-13, and the Navy called that the SNV. That was 450 horsepower and fixed gear. I'm not a pilot, but I'm told it's a very forgiving aircraft, good aircraft to learn on. And then we have the final plane they flew, which is a North American Aviation T-6. That's 600 horsepower retractable gear. And once the cadets mastered that aircraft, they received their wings and were sent on to other specialties like multi-engine or fighters.
We're speaking with Dick Leininger and Todd Lofquist from the Minnesota Wing of the Commemorative Air Force on Minnesota Military Radio. Todd, Dick's been kind of taking all the airtime here, but I understand that if we wanted to, we can come over and we could take a ride on that B-25.
Yes, we have. The pride and joy of the unit is the B-25, and that's the one that a lot of people want to take a ride on. I was fortunate to be able to go up there, up on the Miss Mitchell myself last year, and it's a very fun experience, loud, but it really gives you the sense of what these pilots, these young men, back in World War II went through. I mean, it's easy to see them in a movie or on a documentary, but to actually experience the thrust of the engines as you take off, and then how loud they are, and then open the back window up, and what it's like to be at a waist door gunner with the machine gun in your hand, or go back to the tail gunner, and what that was like. That's just something that you can't get when watching TV or watching a movie, but actually being able to experience it. So it's something that I'd highly recommend for people to do.
Dick, you're over here smiling. I just know what this is about. It's raw power. But there isn't much aircraft protecting you from bombs and flak and so forth that was going off during World War II.
No, there's not. There was some armament on the B-25, but it was very thin aluminum through which the bullets could go, and you were pretty vulnerable.
And your Miss Mitchell is completely restored and available for flights.
Yes, sir. We've rebuilt this airplane to emulate Miss Mitchell, which flew in the Mediterranean theater in World War II. Went from North Africa to Corsica and Sicily. Ended up flying over the Alps to Germany and Austria during World War II.
And if our listeners are interested in booking a flight on there, how do they do that?
I think the easiest thing to do would be to go to our website, cafmn.org, and look for history flights. And you can follow that link and get yourself booked. For the B-25, we need at least six people who are willing to take the flight. And we'll work to organize those six people on a common date when the aircraft is in town so we can get them up in the air. It's about 45 minutes in the airplane. It includes the briefing, the warm-up, the taxi, in air and in landing.
In summertime would be a good time to do that.
Summertime would be a wonderful time to do that.
How far in advance do you have to call, and what days of the week are they available?
Again, it depends on whether or not the airplane is in town. And it's there most weeks. It's gone typically on Saturday and Sunday to air shows. But if you call and ask for a flight, we'll work with you to find a date that works for you and the five other people and the aircraft.
And there's a charge for taking that flight, and that money helps you to preserve the aircraft. And
exactly. We are a private nonprofit organization. We have no source of income. We are all volunteers. And we raise money to keep these planes in the air, to remind people what our veterans did for us, to perpetuate the memory of their service. And selling rides is one way we can do that to keep the aircraft in the air.
So once again, information on that's available at cafmn.org, or you can go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. We'll have a link to that site. Right. Gentlemen, we're just about out of time, but I know you've got some events coming up.
Well, our next event is going to be our hangar dance. We have two hangar dances a year, another way for us to raise money. We have a real World War II hangar that we're in, and we push the aircraft out on the ramp. We get the Roseville Swing Band to come in. We put parachutes down the sides of the hangar to help with the ambiance. And we open the doors at 6. We give swing dance lessons at 7, and the band starts playing at 8. And they play until midnight. There is a halftime in there to give the band a break. And if Miss Mitchell is in town, and it will be May 19th, we will start the engines on Miss Mitchell, which is always a crowd pleaser.
And this hangar is in St. Paul?
South St. Paul. It's at Fleming Field. It's just south of downtown St. Paul. And if you go to the website, you'll find a map. And the price is $15 a person. And even if you don't dance, it's a wonderful people-watching opportunity. We give prizes for costumes, period costumes, civilian, military. And it's a fun event.
And just a few seconds left. Was there another event you want to talk about?
Our open house is June 21st. And there, anybody can come. There's no charge for admission. And you can come in and see our aircraft and some other fun things we're going to do. We're open on Wednesdays and Saturdays, and there's no admission charge on any of those days.
This is formerly the Confederate Air Force, now the Commemorative Air Force. Information available at cafmn.org or minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today.
Our pleasure.
Those Dick Leininger and Todd Lofquist from the Minnesota Wing of the Commemorative Air Force. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase and discuss a national business that has continually made efforts to support service members and their military families. America Inn, a national hotel chain, was in town last week for its annual convention. The conference, attended by more than 400 employees, included a packaging event for military families. They prepared gift items that included bicycles and tote bags stuffed with games, toys, and other items that promote family time. Previously, America Inn had sent thousands of care packages to deployed service members, but this time chose to focus on the families. America Inn also invited Beyond the Yellow Ribbon to speak to its employees. Annette Kuiper, Director of Military Outreach for Minnesota, accepted the invitation and offered words of inspiration and motivation during the packaging event. Annette thanked the group for their previous work and specifically for their efforts to package gifts for military families while in Minneapolis. She spoke of the importance of the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program and mentioned that businesses that go above and beyond are a key part in making the program work. Annette discussed the deployment process and how valued and helpful this kind of support is to military families. She said the combined efforts of American hotels nationwide are truly making a difference. Thank you, American, for going above and beyond in support of service members and military families and going Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is a comprehensive program that creates awareness, connecting service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Get your business involved in efforts that support the military community by clicking the Join a Yellow Ribbon Network in your area button at beyondtheyellowribbon.org. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, united to bring service members all the way home. Coming up next on Minnesota Military Radio, we'll hear about a special luncheon program for military moms and grandmothers. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a minute, we're going to hear about a special luncheon for military mothers and grandmothers. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelledo.
As April, the month of the military child, comes to a close, I find myself reflecting on the sacrifices and service of our military and veterans families, especially the children. Children of service members deal with many issues unique to their situation. Some move frequently, worry about a loved one in harm's way, or just feel the stress of being separated from a parent for extended periods of time. All of these issues can make normal childhood activities, such as going to school, watching television, and playing with friends, more difficult. It is estimated that over 15,000 children in Minnesota have been affected by a parent's deployment. The children of service members sacrifice a great deal when their parent is deployed, and they are rarely recognized for that sacrifice. During this past month, Governor Mark Dayton sent military children a letter of gratitude in honor of their service and sacrifice. It's important that we support these children because they might not have the support system around them. When they receive a signed letter from the governor, it makes them feel very important. The fact that someone is taking time to acknowledge them goes a long way. I am proud of our tradition here in Minnesota. With April coming to an end, let's not let the concept behind this program end. I challenge you, our listeners, to continue to recognize the sacrifices of our youngest members of society all year. I guarantee it, it will impact them more than you'll ever realize for years to come.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. The Farmington Yellow Ribbon Network, formerly called Farmington Warrior to Citizens Yellow Ribbon Network, was the state's first proclaimed Yellow Ribbon City in December 2008. Joining us now to talk about that is Paulette Olson. Paulette, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
Can you tell us, how did you get involved in the Farmington Yellow Ribbon Network?
Well, my brother is currently serving in the South Dakota National Guard, and I kind of wanted to find a way that I could, if not directly to him, indirectly, help his fellow soldiers out there doing my part as my being a citizen and doing my civilian duty as that, and found the Yellow Ribbon Network by a meeting hosted by Annette Kuiper, and one thing led to another, and she got a group going, and as you said, we became the first Yellow Ribbon City, and now we're up to many more cities in the state being Yellow Ribbon cities and growing all the time, so it was a way for me to give back to the soldiers that have given so much to us.
Now, can you tell me what type of things does the Farmington Yellow Ribbon Network do to help military and military families?
Well, we have a yearly military family picnic that this year we're doing in June. We also do veterans dinners basically around all the different churches within Dakota County, Farmington area. We do hold those every first Monday of from September to May. And we also do a military family night at the police department in Farmington, where the public safety night, where they can come in and meet the officers and get to know them and their community. And we also have, as you said, the luncheon coming up here in a couple weeks.
Now, Paulette, we've got the 1st Brigade Combat Team, our 34th Infantry Division Red Bulls, on the way home. Over the course of the last year, I'm sure that your Yellow Ribbon Network did some things to help the families. Sometimes it's just simple things, isn't it?
It is. It's just, you know, even while they're gone, we've actually had soldiers contact us to say, I didn't get this done before they're deployed, or we've worked out with different organizations, whether it be a church or other organization or our organization, helping families where the mom's at home with the kids and she needs some house cleaning help, or you know, daycare for the kids, or helping them with whatever need that they have, mowing the lawn, shoveling the sidewalk, anything that we think a military family would need, and helping them out to make their service, you know, and their deployment while their service members are gone a little bit smoother and easy for them. And that's really the whole concept of the Yellow Ribbon Network, is helping those families that need it.
So as we say, when the service member is deployed, the family sacrifice as well.
They surely do. Yes, they do.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about how you're organized in Farmington? Your volunteers come from all over the city, involve some city officials, church officials. Who all's involved?
We consist of church members. That's kind of where I become my piece, is my church is involved. Church members, city leaders, we have a person on our committee that is on the teacher in the school system, so she helps with that piece of it. We have retired citizens that help us out that come in, and we actually are having our next meeting tonight. So we meet once a month and just organize different things that we, can do to help the families and help, like I said, help them, with their deployments. And, it doesn't end while they're deployed. It also is, even once they're home, the continued support to the community.
We're speaking with Paulette Olson from the Farmington Yellow Ribbon Network on Minnesota Military Radio. Paulette, how does the Farmington Yellow Ribbon Network reach out to the military families? How do the military families contact you?
We have our website that they can go to. It's farmingtonw2c.org, and they can also go through their local community. We have a lot of Burnsville is a Yellow Ribbon city, Apple Valley is. They can go to their city website and join through there, find out what they can do to help their community, and and or calling, like I said, through our website and contacting us that way.
And Paulette, I know that since you were the first Yellow Ribbon city that you've been called on to help other cities figure out how to organize and how to become Yellow Ribbon. How often does that happen?
That's a good question. I'm not part of getting that involved as setting that up. I know that they have those criteria that each city has to go through that they have to do to become a Yellow Ribbon city. And it's, just organizing in that way. So it's nothing that I start up, but I'm, can be part of that with meetings and that kind of thing. And if someone, a town doesn't have a Yellow Ribbon city and they want to get one going, they can, also check at, go through our website. Again, that's farmingtonw2c.org.
Or if our listeners want to get involved in a Yellow Ribbon network, you can go to beyondtheyellowribbon.org. And click on Join a Yellow Ribbon Network in your area.
That's correct.
Paulette, can you give us we've just got a minute before break. Can you give us a few more examples of how the Farmington Yellow Ribbon Network has helped military families?
Boy, it's really reaching out to those families to do what we can. We've actually also not long ago helped a family from Bloomington actually move to Farmington, and they contacted us for that help. We also just had, in conjunction with our Yellow Ribbon group, we just had the Farmington, a boy in the school who's going to be in the military, decided he wanted to do his part. So we have our first Farmington student Yellow Ribbon chapter, which is really neat. And we're going to have some help from them for our luncheon coming up. So that's a really new piece of the Yellow Ribbon organization that we're looking forward to working with them.
Paulette, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about the fact that you're the chairperson for the Farmington Yellow Ribbon Annual Military Mother-Grandmother Luncheon.
All right.
This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we're speaking with Paulette Olson from the Farmington Yellow Ribbon Network. Paulette, I understand that you are the chairperson of the Farmington Yellow Ribbon Annual Military Mother-Grandmother Luncheon. Can you tell us how that started?
Yeah, that was one of our first big goals that we wanted to do, that we decided what could we do as first dealing with helping out those families. And we decided, let's have a luncheon for our moms and our grandmas, that if it weren't for them, we wouldn't have our soldiers and they wouldn't be out there fighting, for our country and that. And I know that we wanted to, they're the ones that really have to, family members, really have to worry about them when they are off and doing their part. And we wanted them to have a day to get together and experience things that only they as moms and grandmas know about and can experience together. And we thought, what a better way than to have a luncheon for all of them to be able to get together and do that.
So, Paulette, how did that first luncheon go last year?
Actually, this is our fourth year. Our first year we had 40 women, and we already had to move it to a different place because last year we ended up serving about 115 women, and we're expecting about that many again this year. So It's grown from year to year, and it gets we have a lot of the same women come every year, and then they have new moms coming in that might have new soldiers going off, and so it keeps growing, and that's our goal, is to have that do that. If we can grow one person more each year, the better off we are.
Now, Paulette, is this a white tablecloth dress-up luncheon?
It's a white tablecloth and napkins and flowers on the table, and I'm not going to give too much away because we don't want those moms out there that are coming to know a lot of what's going on, but we have some pamper stations that we do, and it is a sit-down luncheon. We serve them, and we have volunteers that, you know, come in to do that, and again, it's a sit-down meal, and we have prizes that local businesses give to us to give away to the moms and grandmas, and again, it's just really a day for them to have a nice lunch, spend some time together, and we also, this will be our second year that we've invited Gold Star mothers and grandmothers as well, so we have a few of them joining us this year again as well.
Blue Star and Gold Star, moms and grandmothers.
Yeah, Blue Star, Gold Star, and for those people not sure who Gold Stars are, they're the ones who have lost a service member as a family member, and you know, we want to not forget them either, because they're the ones that have, you know, paid the most ultimate sacrifice, so we want to make sure that they're involved as well.
And Paulette, it must be working pretty well if it went from 40 women at the first one up to 115 now. Is that word of mouth, or have you just contacted that many more mothers and grandmothers?
It's word of mouth, and as I said, you know, that we find new people all the time, you know, that are coming in, and again, it really, it's that, and we do have a website that we usually have them go and sign up on. We've had to close it out already now due to the close proximity of the luncheon and that, but anyone that is interested for next year, they can go to the Farmington W2C website, or they can email me at luncheon12@gmail.com for more information.
And Paulette, for our listeners, if they want to get involved, do you need volunteers? Do you need businesses? Do you need money? What do you need to help this continue to go in the future?
Yeah, the businesses for the whether it be the food donation or the prizes or anything like that. And again, it's all donated, people donating their time and efforts to helping us, you know, serve these moms a really nice day and give them a really special day. And again, they can contact us if they want to. The more volunteers, the better off we are. So they can always contact me again at either of those websites.
Paulette, we have a lot of Minnesota National Guard soldiers coming home this month, but we continue to have service members of all branches coming and going from the state as they support the missions. How can folks get involved in the Yellow Ribbon networks?
If they know of a family member that may need some help, again, they can go to either of those websites. We're always out there to help them, and we also have links to other websites for different things that they may need. And again, they can also, as you mentioned before, can go to beyondtheyellowribbon.org and check, you know, they can contact us through that way as well.
Paulette, you sure sound like you're having a lot of fun as part of the Farmington Yellow Ribbon Network and running this military mother-grandmother luncheon.
I do. It's a lot of work, but it's so enjoyable to see those women have an enjoyable day, and it's nice to have them thank me for and my committee and that for helping out, but it's really, we're thanking them, and I really love doing it and really appreciate their service and sacrifice as well.
Paulette, keep up the good work, and thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome, Tom. Thank you.
That was Paulette Olson, chairperson for the Farmington Yellow Ribbon Annual Military Mother-Grandmother Luncheon from the Farmington Yellow Ribbon Network. Joining us now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg. Sergeant Major, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Sergeant Major, I understand that you recently had some competitions for Soldier of the Year and NCO of the Year.
We did last week. From Wednesday through Sunday, we had the competitions up at Camp Ripley for Soldier of the Year and NCO of the Year.
And what all do they have to go through while they're trying to become Soldier of the Year and NCO of the Year?
This competition is pretty grueling. It was better than ever this year, though. They have to do a PT test, physical fitness test. They also undergo weapons qualification, a combatives tournament, an obstacle course. They do day and night land navigation. They do 15 Army warrior tests. And this year they had a 12-mile ruck march in the rain, no doubt. They also did combat wider survival and an appearance board. So it was a grueling competition.
My goodness. Now, Sergeant Major, do these soldiers come from all over the Minnesota National Guard?
They do. In order to compete at this level for the state championship, they have had to already compete at their battalion and brigade and division levels, So the people who were competing at Camp Ripley this past week were really the best of the best. These are great soldiers.
And we have some winners.
We do. Congratulations to our new Soldier of the Year and NCO of the Year for the Minnesota Army National Guard 2012, Specialist Peregrine Smith and Sergeant First Class Joshua Schneider are our winners.
And Sergeant Major, if our listeners want to find out more information about the Soldier of the Year and the NCO of the Year, where can they go?
On my Facebook page, there will be a lot of pictures from the competition as well as the winners, and then also on the state website, there will be more information on the competition.
Fantastic. Sergeant Major, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Dick Leininger, Todd Lofquist, Paulette Olson, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg, Commissioner Larry Shelado from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk with documentary filmmaker Luke Heikla about his recent trip to Afghanistan, and we'll examine the future of our VFW post with the incoming state commander. That's next Sunday morning at 7 or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.